You're listening to the Devi Hour Podcast, part of the RotoHeat.com family of podcasts.
Welcome back, everybody. Thursday night, we are at another episode of the Devi Hour. Tonight's going to be another two-team breakdown. We're going to talk through Alabama and Georgia tonight. So it's going to be fun. You know, obviously talk about some names you know and maybe even bring up some that you're maybe not so familiar with. But as always, I'm joined by Paul Veldboom. Paul, and we talked briefly before the show. How's your week looking, other than maybe the worst week of 2020?
It's not the worst, but yeah, it's been a long week of work. Indy 500s this weekend, you know, looking forward to that. You know, it's still nice up here. It's all right. It's just been a long week of work. I know you said the same thing before the show too.
Yeah, it's definitely, you know, definitely not been the greatest week. Definitely ready for the weekend for sure. So we're going to jump into some news and notes. I'll let you kick us off. We've got quite a bit of news, quite honestly. So go ahead and start us and we'll get going.
Yeah, we had like three of them before the show. The first one was basically the Big Ten decided that they weren't going to have football this year. And it's not that they decided, but they reaffirmed it. You had mentioned that the McCaffreys were suing them, and basically they're hoping that they either play football or let them out of their scholarships and head somewhere else. I don't think it's overly surprising that someone is suing them. The problem with the legal system right now is that everyone's behind and they kind of want this to happen yesterday. That's kind of a problem. I'm not a lawyer, and the only one who is shows up on Monday. I'll use that joke again in about a minute. But yeah, it's just interesting sitting at home and reading your phone and people are playing football, aren't playing football, getting sued for not playing football. Yeah, 20-20, man.
It's definitely been a crazy, crazy year. I mean, especially, you know, when you think about the fact that, and part of the lawsuit is just the fact that, you know, the league or the Big Ten is saying one thing and doing another, you know, and mentioned in the article or in the letter from the attorneys, which anybody on Twitter, go to Roto Heat Brad and you can find the letter. I shared it here just a little bit ago. You know, they basically, McCaffrey's attorneys pointed out, hey, there's even discrepancies within your own process because you guys are saying you voted and it was unanimous and this, that, and the other. And we've got Minnesota presidents and some of these other guys saying the otherwise. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see. I think because the legal system takes so long to get things through, we're probably not really going to get, you know, kind of the answer we want, which is, you know, Big Ten football. We're probably not going to get that this season, I would guess, still, just because things go so slowly. Now, that doesn't mean it won't happen in the spring, but, you know, like we've talked about a few shows back, spring football just adds so many complex situations you got to deal with that it doesn't make a lot of sense to make it happen. So I would be nervous in having spring football. Yeah, Jaws, we got to chip in on a lawyer's retainer fee on Mondays. He'd probably be okay if you wanted to pay him, that's for sure.
I've asked him about other things and he said no, his fee's higher than that.
He's not cheap is what I'm hearing. My $5 dances on Monday nights are not going to work the same way for him. We got to pay more for him. I did notice today that South Carolina got themselves a five-star quarterback. Gunnar Stockton committed to South Carolina, which I was really surprised about because I can't think the last time South Carolina got a five-star quarterback. But Stockton is a guy that, you know, I know has already been drafted in the Pinnacle League, but is a guy that looks promising, you know, looks very talented, and he's going to have to run for his life because South Carolina is not the greatest offense. They normally have a few nice playmakers, but that offensive line isn't always the most sturdy. So it'll be interesting to see how he develops. I don't think he'll be there. Yeah, he's 2022, so still 2 years before he gets there, but he's committed to the Gamecocks, so.
And also on the other end of that, they lost Marshawn Lloyd this afternoon to torn ACL. He was a borderline 4 or 5 star running back. Mm-hmm. I wasn't nearly as high on him as Shane, who was here a couple weeks ago. I know you're higher. I know the community as a whole is higher than I am. I don't think he's horrible by any means. I just don't think he was second or third freshman this year, but he's out for the year and hoping he can start next year. So they picked up one, hoping they picked up one. Whenever you come in, it's never a sure thing, but yeah. They picked up one, they lost one.
Right. Yeah, and it'll be interesting to see how things play out, you know, because Division I Council is looking at giving players extra years of eligibility. So we don't know exactly what all is to come, but it'll be interesting to see kind of how all this rolls out. I know that, you know, for some of the players that are looking to go pro and are moving on, you know, U of M's Ambry Thomas, I don't quite know the pronunciation. He declared for the NFL draft. You know, he decided to skip his final years of eligibility. I know that Harbaugh and his staff is trying to do kind of an NFL combine at Michigan Stadium, where they're trying to help players get visibility. So I really think it's cool if a lot of these teams that aren't going to play at least help their guys get prepared for the league and maybe get some tape out there. You know, Brian Fisher over on Twitter had shared kind of this new Detroit News Sports tweet about Harbaugh putting on an NFL combine light at Michigan Stadium for his guys that are going pro. And he basically said, you know, do that, repeat that 9 times, have every university do it, and record it so that the teams have the footage. And I think that would be a smart idea. You know, we've got to be able to be flexible. If you're not going to have Big Ten ball this year, you got to help these kids out, because some of these kids don't get another chance to impress the guys in the league. So,
and you're creating jobs for, I mean, I know it's not a lot of money, but have someone film it.
Yep.
You're creating a job. I hope it helps. I hope that $9 an hour pays for food for some kid who really needed it, because I remember when I was in school, I didn't necessarily need a job, but I know there were a lot of them who did. So, you know, do what you can. You're helping your athletes, you're helping somebody get that job, you're giving someone a real life experience.
Yep, absolutely. You know, and you know, there's just so many positives that you can take and spur from this, that teams really should try to do that. You know, especially if, when you see things like this lawsuit coming from parents, like the parents want their kids to be successful and be able to make it to the league and have a chance. You know, these guys go to these big schools because they think this is the next step to getting to the league. Well, if you're button hooking them and not giving them that opportunity because you're not going to play, but you got to give them some consolation. You know, hey, we're going to, you know, like we talked about, allow you to transfer and go right to one of these other schools, or, you know, allow you extra years of eligibility, or help you get to the league with a proper combine showing off your skills. I mean, something, you know, don't just say, nah, come back in the spring, we'll see if we play. I mean, like.
Yeah, I guess what makes me mad is it seems heavy-handed. It seems like they basically said, hey, we decided, and here comes the finger. Mm-hmm. And say what you want about Harbaugh, he's pretty much raised his middle finger at the conference. James Franklin has pretty much raised the middle finger at them also. I've never seen him hated. I can't think he's too far off base with some of this. Hey, what the heck? You didn't inform us of anything, and now it's, oh, here's the rules, and that's that. It would not surprise me if the NCAA steps in and said, you're all free to transfer somewhere else. The conference can go up a crick, and yes, I don't like the Big Ten much because I live here, and the team in the state that I'm from hasn't won anything and will never win anything, and most of their fans I truly despise.
We talking about Packers fans?
That's good. I'll give you that one. That's good. but the conference might be doing irreparable damage to themselves.
Well, and we talked about a few episodes back about how, you know, we wouldn't be surprised if the NCAA is, you know, fighting for its life. With the way they're handling this situation, they're not adding any believers as to why they're really adding value to college football at all. I mean, you know, there's plenty of ways to do college football without the NCAA. I mean, you know, quite honestly, they're just, you know.
They don't help. They don't help with the money. They're horrible policemen. A lot of the rules that they have, hey, you can't put frosting on cookies when you have recruits in. Are you serious? Who decided that rule? When you start hearing about some of the
weird little
things,
you know, it's crazy.
Why do they exist?
You know, it's like a lot of big groups in the world. Eventually, they started with a good purpose, and things kind of went downhill.
Yes,
and that's the nice way of saying it. So, you know, and these are continuing stories that you'll want to keep your eyes on. You'll want to see how they transpire, because it doesn't just have effects for 2020 and the season that's currently happening. It has effects for, you know, the future. I mean, the NCAA as a whole. So, but we digress. That sometimes happens. This is our show. We can do what we want. So now we're going to get to the meat and potatoes. We're going to talk Alabama and we're going to talk Georgia tonight. I'm going to, like last week's episode, I'm going to kind of break down just from a high level the type of team they are. And that'll give you, you know, any of you seasoned fantasy players will understand what that means for Devy. You know, guys that are in 4-3 schemes, the defensive ends, you know, you want to look at those guys in fantasy football if you're an IDP, because, you know, they're probably going to be rushing passers, things like that. Where a 3-4 defensive end is not nearly as enticing, you know, from the offensive side. You know, a team that's zone blocking scheme, you know, the type of running backs they deploy, how that works for the NFL game and how that helps your fantasy team. You know, some of these conversations will come up as we go through them. And I thought last week went well, so we're kind of going to keep the same approach. We're going to hit two teams tonight and see how it goes. This may switch up as we go through the season. If things start to go off the rails and we don't have a lot to talk about, maybe we switch up and just do one, or maybe we go deeper and look at, you know, smaller schools, different divisions, things like that. But so far, we're doing two a night. So Alabama Crimson Tide. Everybody knows their head coach, Nick Saban. I remember him from being a head coach in Miami, the Dolphins, or Michigan State when, you know, up here when I was growing up in Michigan. I remember him well. All of a sudden, he goes to Alabama and becomes a juggernaut. His OC this year is actually new in the last year, Steve Sarkisian. Anybody who knows football knows Steve Sarkisian. You know, he was with the Falcons for a little while as the OC. He's been kind of all over the place. Defense coordinator is an unknown guy. His name's Pete Golding. He's kind of come up through the ranks. And kind of been a Saban type of disciple. I won't say specifically because he's been on some other staffs. Both Georgia and Alabama run very similar styles of defense where it's kind of a multiple front. There's times you'll see 4-3 looks. There's times you'll see 3-4 looks. That's a big deal because they have to have some very positional, flexible defensive line players, whether it's linebackers or linemen, because they have to be able to do a lot of different things. And even in the secondary, you know, corners on a 3-4 look different than corners on a 4-3, so they have to be a little bit, you know, they have to be able to do a little bit of everything. From what you've seen with the offense and defense over the years, Paul, do you have any big takeaways from the type of scheme they have, a specific type of player that is successful moving from, you know, in Alabama to the pro game? You know, use examples, feel free, talk freely about what you think about this offense and defensive schemes.
Sure. Before we forgot one news and note. Sage Surratt, oh. Wake Forest, he declared, I think he's around a 3 or 4 selection. I know other guys think he's a 1 or 2. We'll see. We'll talk about him on a future show, I'm sure. But just a news and note we forgot.
I would have loved to see him play another season.
Yes. Tape helps. On the defensive end, yes, these guys have more scheme versatility than a lot of the other ones, but it's because they can recruit all 5-stars. Almost literally. They just have more talent, and eventually they figure it out and go, okay, you're playing 3-4 end. You're playing here, you're playing here, you're playing here. And they can use their talent and get 9 wins just solely off of that. This last year was about the worst Bama defense I think I've seen the whole decade, and they still were ranked, 12th at the end of the year? And the defense was very, very below average for what their standards were. The only one who... I'm not saying that they're not going to have a lot of future NFLers there, but the only one from a fantasy perspective who interests me is Moses, and I hope he plays, and by I hope he plays, I mean he was hurt last year.
Yep.
I remember when he was considered more of an edge prospect out of IMG, and I did not see future middle twitchy backer out of him, and that's what he is. Georgia side, they always seem like they have a couple guys who are mocked in the first round at the start of the year, and at the end of the year, you're like, yeah, you're going round 4. And then the one guy who finally makes it, he pulls a gun on someone, and he takes himself out of the league. Nice job, DeAndre. That's good work right there. But as a general sentence, they have so much talent overall, generally, that they use that to get their 9 wins in the SEC, and that's the floor, really, for both of them right now. Was there someone else who interested you from a fantasy perspective or from a, hi, I think this guy's the top half of the first round?
Well, I think, you know, when you're talking about and putting in perspective, Bama's had 41 players selected in the NFL draft over the last 4 years. I mean, Bama they just churn out NFL caliber talent. And, you know, it's interesting to me because really what that does is that tells guys that you're recruiting, this is your best chance to make it to the league because we're averaging 10 a year. And no other team in the country can say that. You know, Bama has a lot of quality guys. I mean, especially on the defensive side, you've got, you know, Patrick Surtain to go with Dylan Moses. If you're in, so frame it IDP. If you have cornerback specific leagues that you're doing that have to play corner, I think Patrick Surtain will be good for a few years, but then he'll probably start to waver off because he's going to lock down. Like, he's a very good corner, and I think he's better than some of the Alabama corners that have come out recently. Because he's not only does he have NFL pedigree, but he's intelligent. He's very good at diagnosing the play and watching the quarterback and being able to, you know, just make some things happen. He's a good tackler. You know, I think he's very Minka Fitzpatrick-like, but I think he's got a better athletic profile. You know, Minka's more of a safety, where I think Patrick Surtain really truly can be a corner. You know, those are kind of the two guys I like the most. Dylan Moses. If he stays healthy, he's the best linebacker in the next year's draft. If he doesn't stay healthy, he's going to slide because people don't trust the health. And I think that's why Bama's defense looked the way it did last year, because he was the leader. Like, he was putting guys where they needed to be, and with not having that type of presence on the field, I mean, things just take a hit. You're asking younger guys to step into roles they're not ready to do. You know, and multiple front defenses aren't easy to get down because you have to know your assignment depending on the type of defense you're deploying. So if you're playing games where you're doing 4-3-3, 4-nickel all at the same time, I mean, that's a lot to process for a young kid, especially coming out of high school where they run the same defense. Like, there's not a lot of difference to it. You're basically either covering or attacking and some of that thing. So from the Bama side, those are really the only two defenders that I'm super excited about. Typically, from an IDP side of things, they produce NFL linemen. They just don't produce very good NFL linemen. They're just guys that come in, get highly drafted, and are successful NFL players. They're just not successful IDP fantasy football players. So, and ultimately, the Debbie Hour is a fantasy football show. So I'm going to talk fantasy football-wise. Surtain, I think, can be valuable for cornerback-specific IDP for a few years until he gets mature enough where teams stop throwing the ball at him so much.
Fun fact, I actually have a game-used jersey of his father with the Dolphins.
Oh yeah, who actually
most guys don't remember that this guy was like a top 5 corner in the league.
Oh yeah.
But
well, he was during the Marino days, wasn't he?
Little after.
Oh, was he after? I'm about to say, I felt like he was kind of mid to late 90s.
Yeah, he most don't remember that he was actually pretty awesome, but I'm not as high on him as what you are. I remember when he came out and he was high school teammates with Asante Samuels kid, who also hasn't really developed like he should. Thank you, Willie Taggart. But yeah, Sertan, he has the talent. We'll see if he gets it mentally this year.
Yeah, I mean, and that's, you know, and that's ultimately the thing. Do they put it together as they get more time? You know, because so many of these guys aren't staying as long as they, you know, as they used to. They're not staying all 4 years. They leave early because they know, you know, because the draft board says, hey, you're a first-round pick or you're a second-round pick or whatever, and they jump ship even if they really need a little bit more seasoning. Because, I mean, think of players like Leonard Floyd. You know, we're talking Georgia. He really needed another year of college football before he got to the league. He gets to the league, not really all that exciting. And I don't know if another year would have made him more exciting or not, but another year would have at least given him some more time to mature and grow and learn, you know, before he got to Chicago and kind of stunk up the joint. And now he's in LA hoping for a second chance, you know? I think
he made the right decision.
You don't think he's a mediocre.
He's a mediocre talent in the league, and he got paid $30 or $40 million from a team that we both dislike to completely stink for the 9th overall selection.
So what you're saying, another year of college ball wouldn't have helped?
No, he made the proper decision. He's a C+ talent that got A- money, and he helped the Bears lose.
For that, we thank you. For that, we thank you.
Thumbs up.
That's funny. So we'll talk about the coaching staffs, then we'll go into specific offensive players. I mean, obviously right now we're talking defensive players because there are some to talk about. You know, from the Georgia side of things, they look a little different. So their defense is very similar to Bama's. You know, Kirby Smart is the head coach. Todd Monken, anybody in the NFL probably knows Todd Monken because he's been around in the NFL some. And the DC is Dan Lanning, kind of an up-and-coming type guy as well. Their offense is very much a Todd Monken offense. A lot of passing. They don't necessarily pass the setup the run. They pass a lot, and then they'll sprinkle some runs in there. Because of the type of players that Georgia has, though, I think they're going to have to include the running backs more because their running backs are the most talented skill position players outside of George Pickens. So, you know, so we'll get into that a little bit later when we talk specific players. Georgia's defense, though, is stout. I mean, they may not produce a lot of NFL talent, but they have a very good college defense. Last year, they led the FBS in the fewest points allowed. They returned 7 of those starters. You know, but unfortunately, on the flip side, new OC with Todd Monken, so he's installing a new system, trying to make it work to these players that were for the older system. So it'll be interesting to see how that works. You know, for Georgia, I think Jamie Newman and Daniels will be fine because they're both very good passers as well as a good athletic profile. So what Monken will do works for them. I don't know about Cook and White. I think White needs to be given the ball a lot more, but I don't know that he'll get that opportunity. So we'll see. The interesting thing I thought about both these teams is, man, when you're looking at, you know, when you think about Bama tight ends, you know, you think of the O.J. Howards of the world. Looking up and down Bama and Georgia's tight end groups, it's like the who's who of nobodies, like guys that I'm no interest fantasy-wise in. Are there any tight ends for either team that you have any interest in?
Bama, no. I think Forrestall gets drafted probably around 5 to 7, yeah, and he blocks. Georgia has McKitty,
right,
who transferred from FSU. I remember I really liked him for a minute, and then I realized he couldn't block, and he's got stone hands. not bad hands, but stone hands. He might have the athletic profile that he gets selected. I got to see a lot more consistent hands before I consider this guy. I don't remember his first name, but Washington was, I
Oh,
think, the
Darnell
number.
Washington. Yeah, he's the
Yeah,
freshman.
was, I think, the number two ranked tight end this year. He's got the raw tool, but he's not a little slow. He's kind of a lot slow. And when you're not separators,
That's a problem.
maybe he develops into it, but I'm not holding out hope for him.
Yeah, no, I wasn't impressed with either tight end room when I was looking kind of up and down the group. Washington, so, because the other side of it is if you come in to college and you need a lot of refinement, but you're going to a system that doesn't really focus on the tight end, really what you're doing is you're kind of a small route tight end. I mean, it doesn't make me interested in adding them to my Devy rosters for hopeful NFL careers. Like, these are guys that I would let sit and just, if they blow up and they have a great couple of years and they get drafted, so be it. But I'm not drafting them. On the other side of things, though, there are plenty of quarterbacks, running backs, wide receivers that I have interest in. So I'll let you start on that, on the train, and we'll go quarterback, then we'll go running.
Mac Jones, he's got ridiculously slow feet. He's got a C minus arm. I didn't see much. I mean, I'm not saying he doesn't have the brain, but from a football side, he's a little slow on it. I think he probably is the year just because of the virus situation. He'll probably go round seven if he's selected. I don't think he gets selected. I think ultimately Young takes over and Jones stays in school next year and he's benched. Young, the true freshman, I wrote down accurate. He's a good athlete. I see more of a very high four versus a five with him, as far as the star.
Yeah, I think 247 has him at a 5-star.
I thought he was a consensus five. I'm not too far off of that. I don't know if he's got the true size for it for me to be interested from a pro perspective, but then the MVP is also someone who I thought was a wide receiver. Whoops, that take didn't work out there. Young, we'll see. I somewhat thought the same thing with Tua also. He was a little undersized, but he was accurate and he was athletic for what he had there. What did you think about those guys?
Well, yeah, Mac Jones. I mean, like, Mac Jones just doesn't excite me. I mean, he never was strong enough to really be, a big deep ball threat. I mean, because when you're a pro style quarterback, there has to be some sort of thing that you do really well. He's not super good with his reads. He's not super strong to make all the throws. He can make all the throws, but he's not going to give you a very good, kind of deep out routes. I mean, his out routes are going to be, more like the 15 to 25 yard range, where some, really good ones can get you much further. Bryce Young, on the other hand, I mean, I don't knock the 4 or 5 star type rating. I think he's very talented. I know, if I remember, it was either, I think it was 247, compares him to like a Russell Wilson type player when it comes to how he can move around to distribute the ball. I want to see him read strong defenses. I want to see him read and make tight window throws. Some of the things that you do in college, I want to see, just see how he does it, how he handles it. It seems like he was always the best player on the field, and it shows. I see that in college in the SEC. But I think the sky's the limit. I think he's super talented. We've learned nowadays that it doesn't matter how tall you are to play quarterback. You can be 5'11", 5'12", 6 foot, and still be successful in the NFL. So I think we've debunked that myth. If you're good enough, it doesn't matter. So I'm all for it. I don't know. I don't have any Bryce Young shares, mostly because I didn't draft him. I mean, it's just people took him before me because I was looking at other directions. In Devy leagues, you're unfortunately going to get that, where you are looking at, running back. All of a sudden, quarterbacks start getting taken, or wide receiver. I mean, it's just Devi can go anywhere. There's, you know, we all have boards per se, but in the end, anything's possible. So, I just never got any shares, but I like him. Good player.
Yeah, I second that. So I think all my Devi leagues are super flex leagues, and the positional scarcity said he's going higher than I'm willing to invest. I would rather have Ugalele
Oh yeah.
than him also. And the same thing happened with him. I thought I could invest at, you know, a $20 bill, and he went for 60 or 70, and you're going, well, okay, I guess I'm out. Like, and that happens in, you know, leagues like that. All of a sudden, no one's heard of Trey Lance, and then 5 seconds later, yeah, he's going fourth overall in your super flex combo, and you're going, okay, I was interested. Never mind. So it's interesting how you get some of these devies and how someone else thinks about them and how the price tag just it prices you out rather fast.
Oh, for sure. You know, and that's going to happen. You know, guys fall in love with a player, and sometimes that just happens. And I'm okay with it. I mean, you know, with it being Devi, you know, there's always going to be another guy, you know, and I can just look elsewhere and try to find a quarterback that I like in a different direction. I mean, and we saw it in the Pinnacle League, you know, there was always other quarterbacks. I mean, I didn't take a ton of quarterbacks early. I took like one or two, and then turned around later and just took younger ones that were five-star prospects, going, all right, well, these are my dart throws, and you know, and maybe they pan out, maybe they don't. What do you think about Jamie Newman and JT Daniels over in Georgia?
Newman, he reminded me of DeAndre Francois. He kind of throws off plane a little bit, but he's a decent athlete. He's got B accuracy, and he only really reads one side of the field. He doesn't really scan the field a lot. I thought he was around 3 through 5 player next year. He does have upside. If he can fix some of the things that he should fix, he could go first round. I'm not willing to pay and find out, especially for where he's at in super flex right now. But he reminds me a lot of the before Jimbo's horrible O-line destroyed DeAndre Francois. DeAndre Francois. He looks the same. He's the same height, the same weight, the same throwing motion. Yeah, he's just DeAndre Francois. Daniels, I'm somewhat happy he got out of USC. He came in and he played in 2018 as a 17 year old. He literally was able to classify out of his high school senior year and be like, hey, USC's got nothing. I'm gonna go play. So he did get hurt last year. I think it was an ACL. I don't remember for sure. There were some snaps last. He played for, I think, one half against, I want to say, Fresno. And there were three plays I looked at and went, this is why you're going in the first round. There were three plays I looked at and went, you're going undrafted because of this. The fact that he can probably sit behind Newman the whole year and his age. Everyone thinks the guy's just old and he's washed up and he transferred. No, he needs to sit there, learn. He's got all the talent. He needs to sit. And he never. I hope that last year humbled him, because if he's humbled and he's motivated, look
Dangerous.
out.
Yeah.
Look out. He might, 2 years from now, he might be a complete afterthought, like Kyle Allen was. And now, granted, he played in the pros last year, but he also was horrible. But he might be second, third overall, if things break for him and he learns from his mistakes.
Yeah, Daniels, I like. I still think he has plenty of time to bounce back and fix some of the things. You know, when you're playing young and you're looking, you know, he came in and looked good at a young age, and that can go to your head. You know, you get over confident in yourself. You know, it's important to be confident. It's also important to be not too confident, because otherwise, then you go the other direction. You know, Newman reminds me a lot of like Jalen Hurts without the production. You know, I think Newman could be successful as a dual threat quarterback in the league with the way the league goes. But I just need to see more out of him. I need to see maybe some better leadership. There's something about his game when it comes to the kind of the mental side of things where I'm like, I want to see something more to push me over the top. You know, he's got the talent and the character to be a high draft pick, but there's just some things missing that I would like to see. And hopefully this year he gets an opportunity to show it, because I think, you know, he's the type of quarterback the league's looking for, because what he can do with the ball in his hands, running or passing, you know, he's not, yeah, that I'll leave it at that. I mean, there's some things about his game that I'm not super high on, but I think that could also be, I need to watch more tape on him. You know, I wrote down some things that I was concerned about, but he also, some of the games that I watched, I was like, well, I didn't expect anybody really to be good against these guys or that good.
He needs more precision. I noticed there were a lot of scores that he basically threw it up and said, whoever number 7 is, he stood out as the big outside receiver. And I'm not a Sage Surratt from an NFL perspective fan, but when you're playing BC, Georgia Tech, whoever they're against, say Surratt's going to just man-child someone. He basically threw it up to size a lot, and he didn't have a lot of the precision routes that I was hoping for out of Newman.
I could see that. I can get behind that. So those are kind of the four quarterbacks that you need to know about. One, maybe need to know about to stay away from, and then three, you need to know about because they have some relevance. Probably some first, second, third round type NFL draft capital type guys. From the running back position, Bama's got quite a few guys. I think some of them are relevant, for sure. Some of them may not be so much, but we'll name them anyway. Najee Harris, obviously the name everybody knows. Brian Robinson Jr. is a senior. Keelan Robinson's a sophomore. Trey Sanders, the freshman. And Roydell Williams, also the freshman. Over in Georgia, there's really only two running backs to talk about, Zamir White and James Cook. Zamir White's a sophomore. Cook's a junior. Who do you like? Who don't you like?
I'll start with Bama. I think Najee Harris ultimately runs a 4.75 40. And heads about round 4.75. The fourth through the middle of the seventh round, I don't think this guy's... I think he's ultimately Bo Scarborough with...
That's a tough one.
With
yeah.
better hands. And when I am this low on somebody and they're going first to second round of non-superflex, you don't own any shares of them.
Yeah.
I see some functional athleticism, but he kind of reminds me of James Wilder, who was also probably the top, maybe the second running back when he was a freshman, but they both played linebacker in high school also, and ultimately I think they both should have stuck with the defensive side of the ball. And when you're talking about someone that's going first or second round, again, that's not a very positive light in my eyes. Again, I'm just one individual. You make your own decisions. This is just one man's perspective. Brian Robinson, I have no clue how he's behind Harris. I think he's Josh Jacobs a little bit in that he's behind a big guy who's a better college athlete. He's really smooth. He's got nice hands. He doesn't have elite speed, but I don't think he needs it. I ultimately think the guy ends up going round 2 through 4 after this year. We'll see how much film he gets. Trey Sanders, he was probably the top or the second running back as a freshman last year. If you had Emory ahead or behind him, it was pretty split. I was on the Emory side, but I drafted Sanders also. He had an ACL. I think it was an ACL this last year. But from everything I have heard, he looks phenomenal this year. I don't think he'll see the field much just because of what they have in front of him. Keelan Robinson, I couldn't find a lot of film on him. I will defer that one. I watched, I don't remember his first name, Hozu McClellan, I think it was. He's not someone that wowed me, and when you're against high schoolers, you have to really, I mean, I'm not saying he's not going to have it, but I just kind of looked at the film and said, meh. If he shows it, okay, great. I'll review you 12 months from now, or actually it's August, 4 or 5 months from now. Hopefully we get football. And we'll go from there. But that's at least one side. And what did you think about them, 4 or 5?
Yeah, I mean, really the only one that I'm super excited about is Trey Sanders. You know, I know Williams is a 4-star guy. Is kind of more of a smaller back compared to Sanders. Like Sanders, I love the size speed combo. I think he's, you know, he's got good hands. Everything I've seen in him, he looks like kind of the complete back that you want. You know, I've never been a huge Najee Harris guy. Brian Robinson, Keelan Robinson, Roy Williams. Sanders is really the only guy I'm targeting strongly. Najee Harris, typically, you know, bigger Alabama backs I don't target very often because, you know, maybe it was the Trent Richardson syndrome that scared me away from him for a while. So I've always kind of looked for the guys that look, at least in my mind, to be a more complete back, and that's Trey Sanders. And really, of both of these teams, the one running back I try to own is Zamir White from Georgia, because I think he really does profile as kind of an RB1 in fantasy football. If you're trying to project that, you know, that into a player, him and Sanders, I think, are the two closest things on either roster to RB1 type caliber players. So time will tell, but those are the two guys that I look to own if I have any opportunity to get shares. But I don't have either shares because I never drafted either as early as they went in my W leagues. Yep. Wide receiver wise, what's your thoughts here? So I'm going to name off all the wide receivers. Feel free to talk about the ones you're interested in. And Bama, you know, obviously everybody knows Devonta Smith and Jalen Waddle. John Metchie the third is a guy that people are getting to know. Xavier Williams is a guy that I like a lot. Wound up getting in Pinnacle, thankfully. They got Slade Bolden. They got Javon Baker, Ja'Cory Brooks, Trayshawn Holden, Ty Jones Bell. Like, I mean, they got a ton of guys. Georgia, really the only three guys I think have value to talk about are Pickens, Dominic Blaylock, and Marcus Roseme. I'm not saying value to talk about because you like him or dislike him. It's just guys that I think might have a chance to get into the league. So what are your thoughts on the wide receivers between these two teams?
I will hit the running backs first because I didn't say anything about those guys. Zamir White, there's been a lot of hatred because he doesn't have the best vision right now. He played half of his senior year in high school, and he didn't play a snap his freshman year. Is he behind it? And is vision and feel something that you learn? Yes, yep. It is.
Takes time.
He is an A-plus athlete, and he will run anybody over. He probably runs about a 4.45 maybe. And he's probably going to do that at 2:20. He doesn't have excellent hands, but they're functional. he might be someone that you're selecting first, second, or third next year, depending on landing spot. I know that that's kind of disrespect on some of the receivers. CEH went first overall this year, guys. I'm not saying it just to rub it in. I'm just saying it as a fact. The landing spot matters, and position matters. Cook, his older brother is some really fine hardwood flooring. Smooth. He's expensive. Really nice. Cook, he is shag carpeting. He is ugly, doesn't fit very well, and ultimately at the end of the night, I just want to throw it over and in the river. Also, if you know your stuff, that's your one per list.
Oh, I knew that was going.
Or per show, that's a Wayne Williams reference. I had to get my one per list in. All right, let's hit the receivers. Pickens. He might be more talented overall than any receiver that's in college football. He might have a bigger attitude issue than anyone in college football. I heard some things that they might release him from scholarship because some of the coaches were so fed up with him that they thought about releasing him. He might be the first overall selection in your draft when he's a fresh or when he's out. He might be Donovan Peoples Jones with a bigger mental problem. I don't know what's going to happen with him. I hope he figures it out, and I hope he figures out that he needs others in his life successful, because otherwise he will be wasting just an uber amount of talent. Blaylock also had an ACL. I think it was in the bowl game or the last game of the year. I wasn't a huge fan of his when he was out of high school, but he played better than I expected this last year. I'm certainly interested in him, but I don't think he plays a snap this year just with when the injury happened last year. Rosemi, I think he was like the third or fourth receiver on 247 or something this last year. I think he's got really nice hips for his size. He's really quick with them. He's not the smallest receiver, or he's a big receiver, and he's got really nice functional hips for someone that's not going to play in the slot. He doesn't have A-plus speed, but he's got B speed, and that can be fine. Now, for the size he's going to ultimately fill out at, he uses his hands. They're not the best hands, but he's at least said, hey, I need my long arms to get the ball out of the air. When you're looking at high school film, I don't necessarily want the finished product. I want something that I can say, okay, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. I can see where this is going. I like him. He's someone I have my eyes on. He's not an uber talent, but I can see it. Also, I was a big fan of Demetrius Robertson when he was at Cal. Unfortunately, since then, it doesn't seem like he's gotten any better. He short arms the ball a lot. He went from someone who I was considering as like a top five selection to almost not draftable, and I don't know what happened with him. I think he was the first or second receiver when he was a freshman, and you watch a lot of film on him, and even the highlights, you're kind of looking going, this isn't going to work in the pros. This play ain't going to work. I've lost all faith in him. So I know I've been rambling for a while. I'll let you speak.
No, I mean, you know, it's so most of Devy is all about projecting. It's about kind of looking at traits, looking at things a player does and seeing if it'll work in the pro game, you know. And as a Devy fantasy player, you know, we have really two methods to figuring that out. So it's we watch a lot of film, we trust what we see on the field, or we find scouts that we trust that they call it out and say these guys are NFL ready or NFL caliber player. I mean, you really kind of have two directions. You either do the work yourself, watch the film and see what you see, and you go with your gut, or you find scouts that you trust and believe in, and they have proven track records, and you just go with what they say. So, you know, I tend to be a guy that watches the film, and sometimes not a lot. I mean, you know, Anthony McFarland, I was a big Anthony McFarland fan. There's not as much film on him because he didn't play all that often in college. And this was before I could find any high school film. So all I had was, you know, a handful of games from college, but I'm like, man, he's got some big playability. You know, there's some things there that I like. So I'm gonna go with it. And I'm gonna go with my gut. And you know, and he's a mid-round pick by the Steelers, goes to a place that I think in time it looks good for him as a fantasy player. You know, when it comes to these receivers though, you know, I'm really only interested in probably four to five guys. Devonta Smith, Jalen Waddle, John Mechie, Xavier Williams, and then, you know, George Pickens if he can get his head together. And the rest of these guys, I'm just not sure. Like, I could see a couple of these guys in Bama going to the league, but I could also see them being nothing burgers. I mean, there's, you know, it's like they went with some high caliber talented guys, but I'm like, oh, I don't know how well these guys are really going to transition. There's just things about their game I just don't like, you know. So for me, you know, there's about five guys I really like that I try to get, and then the rest I just let other people take the chance because there's so many other talents out there. So I won't go into too much detail on them because I know we're getting up to that hour mark. So we're the Devy hour, we're not the Devy hour and a half. So I'll just say it. There's five guys I really like from the wide receiver course. One of which has big question marks in George Pickens if he can mature quick enough to use his talent to become a valuable fantasy football player. If you guys want more information about these guys, rotoheat.com. We have write-ups on Devy players. We've been doing individual Devy write-ups. You know, there's a team of guys that are grading the rookies, and as we get to January, we will begin to kind of convert this from a Devy hour to more of a NFL draft hour as we're helping you understand what the rookies are doing and how they're performing and what they look like going into the NFL draft. So, you know, stick with us. If you've enjoyed this, make sure you subscribe, you like, you know, if you're listening to the pod later, rate, review, we appreciate it. The more the merrier, because we love to talk with you and interact with you and have these conversations. If you want, you know, if you have questions, make sure you get them out there. We at some point we'll probably do a Q&A Devy show, but right now there's just not a ton of questions about Devy from our community. So if there are, we'll answer them. Feel free to hang out with us live, ask questions. We'll do our best to answer them. This week, obviously, we didn't get to that because we ran up. There's just so many different people and different things to talk about, but we'll get there. So don't forget, rotoheat.com/Patreon. If you appreciate us enough that you want to make it rain, we would appreciate that as well because we are trying to make this into we're you know we're the Catalina wine mixer. We want to make our bank. So I do want to make sure before we go that I give Paul some final thoughts. Let him go down some more rabbit trails. We got a couple minutes, and then I'll wrap it up, send us off. So Paul, last thoughts, final thoughts, anything else you want to add to the show?
Sure. I'll hit the Bama receivers here fast. Waddle, he's elusive. He's very elusive. I think he ultimately ends up in the second or third round next year. There's a lot that think he goes in the first or second round. I can certainly see it.
And that'll do it for this week's episode of the Devy Hour. Thank you for always listening and supporting, liking and subscribing on YouTube or subscribing to the podcast on any of the major podcast platforms. And as always, for Paul Velboom, I'm Brad Menendez. Have a great night, and we'll talk to you next week.
Thanks for listening to the Devy Hour podcast. Don't forget to check us out on rotoheat.com or on YouTube at rotoheat.